The Laura Murphy Show, episode 30.
Welcome to The Laura Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Laura Murphy Show. I'm one half of your total hosts, Bob Murphy. With me, as usual, is Carlos Lara. Carlos, how are things in Nashville?
They're good, Bob. Thanks.
We hope everyone had a good holiday. This is the first post-Thanksgiving episode that we're recording. Just want to clarify, we're going to avoid talking about what's the obvious thing is the Donald Trump election victory and what things a Trump presidency might mean for the future. That's going to be in the November issue of the Laura Murphy Report. So if you're a subscriber or you want to become a subscriber, can't think of what better thing you could do with your time than to do that. We're going to cover that stuff, but we're not going to hit it in this particular podcast episode because we're waiting on the audio from Carlos and my recent appearance at the Freedom Advisor event in St. Louis. John Moriarty had a Q&A with us that, you know, we did in front of a live audience, and we, in theory, are going to be able to give you guys the audio of that particular, of our segment, not from the whole event, but just our particular segment, where a lot of what we talked about involved our thoughts about, hey, Trump won, now what does that mean for markets and, you know, IBC, that sort of thing. So just want to explain why we're not doing what you might have thought would be the obvious thing for this particular episode. Instead, there's no way anyone listening to this has any idea of what we're going to talk about. You would never see this coming. Carlos has been reading a very famous work, and he said it does have some implications for the financial professionals and things involving the financial sector. And so I thought, you know what? This podcast already is a bit unique. Let's make it even more unique. So why don't we talk about that? So Carlos, I'll let you just give the background here for our listeners. They're now waiting with bated breath. What book have you been reading? How did you start reading it? And then why is this? Well, we'll take the conversation from there, but explain how you came along this book and what is it?
Okay, Bob, you are going to have to work doubly hard on this one, just pulling this information out of me, because the book I picked up is a pretty amazing book. It has some things in it that when I went into it, I didn't expect to find. In fact, it's over 1,000 pages long, and I can't seem to put this thing down. So let me give you some form of an introduction on how and why I even started reading this book. And by the way, the book is called The City of God. And of course, it's written by Augustine. It was written in 400 AD. And Augustine, as you well know, is embraced by the Catholics as their preeminent scholar and theologian, but he is also embraced by the reformists like Martin Luther and John Calvin. So this individual has made a major impression on the world through the writing of this particular book. But how I started into this thing is, I guess, asking a question. And that is, you know, what is truth, really? Would we even recognize it if we saw it, or if we heard it, or if we experienced it? I guess what I'm trying to say is that can we really know the reality of the world and our place in it? And I think it would be fair to say that if we could possess this knowledge, that we would be in possession of a very great power. But, you know, where can this knowledge actually be found? That's what the questions I was asking myself. Where can we find this? And if we could find it, how can we be so sure without a shadow of a doubt that we had found the final truth? Okay. Now, to actually probe this subject and even write on it is something that I've thought about doing for quite some time, but I really didn't have any meaningful way to introduce it to our audiences, Bob, you know, the LMR readers and the listeners on this podcast. And of course, I'm intimidated by this subject to start with. You know, who am I, you know, to even go into the unraveling of such a deep mystery? And the truth is that I can't even attempt it unless I, go to very reliable sources that have actually, plumbed the depths of this theme and have become renowned for, their discovery. And so this is kind of what led me to pick up this book. And you know, I had heard about the book I had heard that it was a book that really held some mysteries but I also realized it was a very, very large book. As I said, it's about 1,000 pages long. And
so can I stop you and hear, this isn't contrived, folks. I'm really learning of this stuff myself. So this is literally going to be a conversation between me and Carlos here that hopefully will be of interest to some of you. So you mean it was like on your bookshelf or you went to the Amazon and ordered it?
No.
What do you mean you say you picked it up?
Okay. Well, actually, I first learned about it from a history professor, a retired history professor. He's probably in his 80s. And he just, we were having a conversation one day about, the world and theological things. And he suggested that I should read that book. He knew of the type of work that I did, the kinds of things that I talked about, economics and that sort of thing. He just suggested, I think you would get a lot from reading this book. And so I actually picked it upon his advice is the reason I went there with it. But I know we're not supposed to talk about Trump and all of what happened, but I have to be honest with you that these two, surprising events that we had happen this year, one being Brexit and the other one being the nomination of Donald Trump as President of the United States, believe it or not, this is what really gave me the impetus to go on ahead and take the plunge and talk about some of the things that I'm discovering in this book. And I think the reason is that it's simply because nobody had any idea that the outcomes that we saw happen in these two events, would actually turn out the way they did. And that was just underscoring for me that when we say repeatedly on the show or we write about it that the future, is uncertain and we can't really predict it. I mean, these two events sort of underscored that for me in a brand new way that just really impacted me.
So just to make sure I'm getting the big picture here, you're saying you were really just like, wow, first Brexit, now Trump winning. Clearly, the so-called experts don't have a clue what's going on. You and I, Carlos, have certainly been saying that the financial markets are on much shakier foundations than the so-called experts would have you believe. So we think there's more, quote, shocks in store for people. And so this sort of has made you step back and say, how is it that we know anything? Are there things that we can know for sure? Am I following that right? And then
you're right on it. You're right on it right there. Okay. That's really what it was. Nobody really predicted these things to turn out the way they did. I know. And yet they did. They happened. And remarkably, we all witnessed, I guess, almost an astonishment that the edifices of international organizations that, for decades, have been towering, boldly as a great emblem of globalization of the world, they've had their foundations shaken to the core. And they've sort of been left in the wake of uncertainty themselves. It's kind of like the smart guys in control, are suddenly out of control and they're scrambling and wondering, what could possibly come around the next corner, So in essence, it's kind of like the whole idea of this new world order, has in effect been repudiated by the average person. And with it, sort of has come this chorus of insinuations of corruption and really what amounts to just plain stupidity on the part of these global advocates. I mean, this is what we have seen since all of this has happened. And so, in a sense, these two things, they were rare and astonishing events for me. And so I started thinking about, gosh, how can we really know? You know, can we really predict? You know, we're always talking about, we can't predict the future, but the truth of the matter, Bob, is we're always trying to read the tea leaves ourselves to try to give some idea of what we can expect, as we did even in our recent video where we were trying to tell people, you know, how to protect themselves from the financial storms that we see coming ahead. So this is all how I came to pick up this book after I'd had it as a recommendation. And I went looking to see what I would find, and what I found, I can't believe.
Well, let me just jump in. We're going to leave people hanging here, but let me just say a word, because I know, you know, plenty of our listeners, I'm sure, are believers. And so they're like, oh, this is great stuff. I'd love to hear Carl's talk, but I know some of them aren't. And so let me just say, for number one, I think it's helpful if you understand where Carlos and I are coming from, like, you know, that you should know this about us, our worldview, just to help you filter and parse the things we say that pertain to strictly secular financial matters. But also, this is an important component of our worldview. And it's not like, oh, yeah, we go to church on Sunday and then we have these things we do then. And then the other 6 days of the week, we're Austrian economists and the two have nothing to do with each other. That's really not correct. And if nothing else, we can say this is partly why we can be so concerned about, or we can have such dire predictions or warnings about things that are coming economically, and yet we're not personally troubled by it, if that makes sense, because we have this source of peace that comes from above. And so, you know, we do feel like, you know, at some point we need to just say that occasionally. So let me, Carlos, let you introduce us. And again, so this is Augustine of Hippo. He's a church father. I'm just looking up here to make sure people see this guy's dates. He was born in 354 and died in 430. And as Carlos has mentioned, he's early enough in Christianity that, you know, Catholics look back to him as a father, and so do the Protestants. They view him as an inspiration as well. And so the very title, The City of God, I think a lot of us probably studied that in our Western Civ classes, like, you know, the dates or whatever, but we didn't know what it was. So what does that title even mean? Why does he call it The City of God?
Well, the quick response to that is that what Augustine is writing about is that there is a city that has real foundations that is being built and constructed by God. In other words, Augustine is trying to say that if you look at the biblical historical record, you find that God's people at one time in history were abandoned and they were taken into captivity by Babylon, which was the great empire, you know, of the world at that time. And the reason they went there is that prior to that, Assyria was the big world empire. And Assyria never felt that they would ever lose that power. They'd had it for a very long time. And then here come along Babylon, now comes into power, takes all these Jews into captivity. And they're there for 70 years. And then they're released. And there's this little remnant of Jews running around trying to, where has God been all this time, you know? And God sends a prophet to them to assure them that, you know, God hasn't abandoned them, that he's been working all the time. And he said, you know, the Babylonians, they think they're in power now. I'm fixing to remove their power. Someone else is, you know, I'm going to put somebody else in their place. And so he's making that prediction right there. And of course, we know that when we think of the Greek empire that came in, and then of course the Roman empire, and we all know that Rome fell, and it actually was falling during the time that Augustine was writing this particular book. And so Augustine is trying to say in this book that there is a city that's being built, again, by God, And then there is a city of the world that's also growing alongside. And of course, the city that's being built by God, it will never end. Its power will never end, whereas a city of the world, it will end. And so that's where the title, you know, of the book comes from.
And so for those who don't want to discuss things in the past without drawing connections to the present, I mean, one obvious thing that jumps out, of course, is many of us have been saying, you know, this age of America, you could call it American empire, perhaps it's a much more humane empire than ones in the past, but I think Jim Rogers has the paradigm where he says the 19th century was clearly the British Empire, the 20th was the American, and he thinks the 21st is going to be the Chinese, and that there's many respects in which, you know, the U.S. is its secular military and economic power certainly eroding, and Americans need to adjust to that fact. And so, of course, if you don't put your fate in the hands of money and militaries, then you're all right. If you're trying to build a residence in the city of God, is that roughly accurate?
That's really it. And again, before people start thinking, oh, Carl's kind of going off the deep end here. Actually, it's a book that helps us stay true to some of the things we've always talked about, Bob. For example, let me come back to a minute about these two events that happened and see if I can sort of tie that back in. You see, these two events for me personally marked three vivid images of what the 10% movement that we often speak and write about and what it might actually look like in real life, you know, when it finally explodes into an unexpected reality. So in other words, when we see the minority represented in the form of the little guy suddenly morphing into the powerful majority, you know, by holding fast to their unshakable beliefs. You know, this is how we see the tipping point for the 10% movement. And so the Brexit thing and the thing that happened with the Donald Trump thing, this was sort of like an image of that for me. We saw a picture of what the 10% might look like in real life. Then the second image I got is that it helped me to better understand, you know, the main point of Mises' explanation about the power that's vested in the nature of the masses, that they're the ones that ultimately determine the course of public opinion, and that when they make their choice and they do it in unison, you know, their choice becomes final. And then, of course, the third thing that I saw in these two events, Brexit and the Donald Trump thing, is that, you know, I saw the image of the politics of obedience. You know, that 16th century document written by Etienne de la Boetie. And if you remember, that's where in it he answers the question of why is it that people obey the government? And then he answers it by saying that they actually enslave themselves by letting themselves be governed by tyrants. But then he goes on to say that the solution or the way to freedom is and we saw it in these two events, you see, is that the tyrants fall when people withdraw their support. So in other words, a secession takes place. Now, see, all these things are things that we speak of regularly when we talk about the things we talk about, Bob. Mm-hmm. And those three images are very much in our language and how we feel. But see, when we start talking about the city of God and what it talks about, because here we are, we don't even know what's going to happen in the future. We don't even know if Trump is going to be able to do anything. It might get worse. Who knows? We don't really know. So the real question at hand is in the final analysis, who is really behind the human will? You know, in these other cases, it's people acting. But who's really behind the human will? So maybe if I word it differently, who's really in charge of the founding and maintaining of world powers? Who really does run the world? Is it the will of the people, or is it the omniscient power of God? And can we actually know which one it is? And if you start reading The City of God, you discover, some answers to this in a very unique way, simply because at the time that Augustine was writing this, Rome, who had existed for 1,000 years, was crashing, burning, and falling. And the people could not believe it. Not only the heathen, but even the Christian, in their own mind, felt that if Rome fell, it must be the end of the world. And you have to kind of put yourself in that place to understand how it must have been like that, the golden empire, the mistress of the world, they called her, was falling. Augustine is writing this book because the Romans, who had previously had been worshipers of gods, with little g's, gods, were now blaming the Christians for the fall of Rome. That because they had stopped worshiping the gods, that they had gotten mad at them, and that's why Rome had fallen. And Augustine now is picking up in a form of apologetics, a set of arguments, trying to explain to these people that that's not true. It can't be true. And in fact, it was silly to think that these so-called gods had any power at all. And he does it in such a delicate way because he's just not being an opponent to those views. He's trying to explain to them very carefully why that wasn't so. And you start reading those explanations and you can't help but to get drawn into that discussion. And just Augustine's manner of explaining it is just, it overtakes you. It's amazing. And so even when we, Bob, in our own book, How Privatized Banking Really Works, where do we start in trying to explain fractional reserve banking and all of that? We started with Rome and the kinds of things that were going on there at the last, which is it fell because they debased the money. You see, that's what really, really, really happened. It wasn't the barbarians, came in and outdid them. It's just that their whole economic structure collapsed. So these are things that, if you weave them together and you understand what Augustine was writing about here, is that he was refuting, what these Romans now were saying was the reason that Rome fell, which was not at all the case. And you follow his line of thinking, you get drawn in to the discussion and you're amazed at how he does it. And this is just at the beginning of the book. But the deeper you get into the book, you start to realize that this man, and this is what he's known for, he actually was the first man who really gave a history and the origin of the world. And it hadn't really been done before. And he takes in a lot of the system of the Greeks into it, because that's what he knew. He knew Roman literature. He knew the system of the Greeks. In fact, he gives a lot of credit to Plato. And I don't have enough information on the Republic because I've never read it, to be honest with you. But I was surprised to see how much credit he gives to Plato and how much Plato and his explanation of the essence, the one God creator that's in the Republic, it really is very close to Christian truths. And so I was amazed to see that in The City of God and how he explains all that.
But it's funny because you may remember, Carlos, we were in a business meeting a few years ago, and somebody asked me, you know, we're going through, folks, just to give you the context, that Carlos and I have been showing our PowerPoint presentations, and I'll sit there and show the monetary base and say at the time what Ben Bernanke was doing, and this is not good from the perspective of Austrian business cycle theory. They're setting us up for another crash. If you think the 08 crash was bad, wait till you see what happens here. And somebody asked and said, so what is your point in doing all this, Bob? Like, it, you know, because they were even saying, like, so can we avert this? And I said, no, the issue is just, you know, when, how bad is it going to be? The longer they push it off, the worse. And if you remember, Carlos, remember I said, what I really want is to educate enough people on the front end and get them telling their neighbors or acquaintances, whatever, so that when this crash happens, it can't plausibly be blamed on the free market. And so you kind of reminded me of that with, you know, now there's this, you know, if you're a Christian, you think that's right. And then now, and you think that the Roman system, you know, Mises talks about the price controls and all that and how that was such a bad thing, you know, coupled with their monetary inflation and how some of the people were welcoming the quote barbarian invasions because they couldn't get foodstuffs in the cities anymore. And I could, that is ironic. If there's, you know, a crisis like that happens, this great Roman Empire falls, and then what do? They're of course not going to blame the actual faults. They're going to, you know, blame some doctrine that comes in. So it's a similar thing. I guess what you're saying is, believe it or not, reading this old book has a lot of lessons for today.
I think it does, and as I said, if you're so moved to pick up the book, what I did is, it was interesting. It's written in books, so it's 22 books, but it's one big book, and he's got all the titles of each of the book categorized as such that I started at around page 400, and I read about 10 pages, and I couldn't believe what I was reading. And then I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to stop right here. I'm going to go back to page one and start reading it there. And that's what I've done. You know, I've started from the very beginning and have walked it all the way through. And as I'm beginning to see what he does in this book, he actually goes into the doctrine of creation of the world, creation of humans. He talks about the fall. Now, the thing about it is that the Greeks and Plato, they had the same beliefs that humans had at first had holiness and they fell from holiness. So it's not too far different from the kinds of things that Augustine is saying. In fact, Augustine was convinced that Plato had read Genesis of the Bible, because after all, Genesis existed long before the Greek philosophers. And so when you start reading some of the things that Plato wrote about it, there's a lot of parallels, because even, again, I have not read the Republic, but the insinuations I was getting from reading what Augustine was saying is that Plato even does talk in terms of angels, or which later morphed into the gods, so to speak, once we got into the gods. But Augustine does begin with the fall of the angels first. And his explanation of when the angels were created is what kind of blew me away, because I'd always in my own head envision the angels being in eternity with God. But no, Augustine is saying they were created within the 6 days of creation. They were the first to be created. And when I was reading there, I couldn't even believe what I was reading, but he basically said in that line that says, in the beginning, God said, let there be light. He went on to say that the light were the angels, the creation of the angels. And I just, at that point, I just said, whoa. And I just had to read more and more what he was saying, because he said that he didn't actually create the sun till days later. And so the separation of the light from the darkness means the separation of the good angels from the angels that had the will to fall. And so that's why in the paradise we have already the fallen angel, you know, going after Eve. And so he has this explanation that I quite frankly had never really heard of before. And he just keeps walking it on down. And at some point he's talking about that there were people running around, again, 400 AD, saying that man had existed for hundreds of thousands of years, as well as the earth. And he was mocking them and ridiculing them how silly it was, because he knew that from day one of creation, it hadn't been more than 6,000 years. And I usually think of that as being a much more recent, you know, way of thinking in modern times. But no, apparently those same thoughts were within the populace at that time. So it's an interesting book from that perspective, is that not only does it cover the fall and the, but it also the one thing that's the most difficult thing to understand, which is the incarnation. And his description of that is just mind-boggling. And he talks about the connection between the Old Testament, the New Testament, and of course the doctrine of the last things or the last days. Now, in a previous study that I had gone into in looking at the various religions of the world, what we really see is that we only have two really main religions. One of them is, you know, Islam, and the other one is Christianity. We have Hinduism, but the two main ones are Islam and Christianity. And they both claim to have the same father, Abraham. They both, you know, have so many of their tenets coming from the Old Testament. But you see that I begin to see the problems there. You know, we think about, we have so much armament today that we could literally destroy the world. But when we started talking to our listeners, Bob, about Storm A, B, and C, and we said that in Storm C, the big difference there is that there you're getting into sacred writings, and you're talking about wars and possibly the mother of all wars. And we keep saying, you know, you can't ignore this because you have a lot of people that believe these things. And the two largest religions are antagonistic with each other, because one of them believes there's only one God, while the other one believes that there's a Trinity, and that's a major rub between the two. So as you begin to read Augustine and some of the things he's discussing, I mean, it allows you to foresee some things that, well, it's a book that you almost have to read it to understand what I'm saying. I can't even do it justice by trying to explain it to you.
Okay, so just you touched on a lot there, obviously. You know, end of the world, that kind of stuff, great wars. But just to make sure people caught that last point, my understanding, very cursory understanding, is that Augustine does get into the doctrine of the Trinity in his book, and you're saying that, you know, that's relevant because even in our times now, like the major forces shaping, whether people are agnostic or atheist or believers themselves, they surely need to be familiar with this stuff just because it motivates so much of what we see on the current political scene, is that you're saying with Islam versus Christianity, that in some respects, you know, one could argue that Allah is similar to the God of the Christian's God and Judaism's God of the Old Testament, because they both think that, you know, Abraham's a patriarch. But you're saying a crucial difference among other ones is that Islam does not endorse the Trinity.
That's right.
Okay, guys. So I just want to make sure I followed what you were saying there. Well, we're nearing the end of our time for this episode. Let me just bring up one last thing for you to address, Carlos, trying to tie this back in, because you had an offhand remark when it encouraged me to do a podcast episode on this. And you said that you saw the difference between fear and greed even in this book. And can you just speak to that a little bit?
Oh, sure. And You know, because of the way we're always talking about the financial markets, you know, from the perspective of Austrian economics and the infinite banking concept, IBC. IBC obviously takes place in the financial services industry and financial markets. And we've always heard that the markets are moved by the elements of fear and greed. That's really what moves markets, fear and greed. Now, we may have a better explanation for greed, and we call it the self-interest, you know. But fear and greed, we're very familiar with those terms. And all of a sudden, I'm reading along, and there they are in this book. And it's just like Augustine was the first one to, almost like he coined the phrase, you know, that the fear and greed, it's right there in the pages. And I said, oh my goodness. And he said, it's a big driving force, fear and greed within humans. And so that's the point that I mentioned to you before. But again, it's just another example of things you're reading and you realize how relevant this book is to our very day. And just one other thing, Bob, here's the thing that really got me. You know, we're always worried about if we you know, print an article, you know, write an article and print it, or we write a book and we want to sell lots of books once we get it out. As good as this book is, because it literally is foundational for Christian theology and Christian thought, he wrote it in 400 AD, but it really actually didn't take off until 1467. So in other words, it didn't even get out to the masses until then. So think about having to wait that long to get information out.
Wow. That's
yeah, I couldn't believe it. And I got that from the translator of this book, because again, it was written in Latin. But this translation, and it's a good translation, was written in 1852, I think. And that was a little bit of tidbit that came out in his translation that pretty much stayed buried all that time. Again, you got to remember that the church basically locked up knowledge for a long period of time. And along with it went this book, as well a lot of the systems of the Greek. You know, all that knowledge was locked up. I guess maybe that's why they referred to it as the Dark Ages, and they really didn't come out till the fall of the Byzantine, empire. And then all of this book, all of this knowledge poured out, and I guess many people say this is what triggered the Renaissance.
Well, perhaps we will have a resurgence in interest in our book 1,000 years from now. Who can say? Well, folks, there's obviously, Carlos and I could keep talking about this. There's lots of things I would want to ask you to follow up on it, but we will end it here in the interest of time. And I just encourage you, Carlos is going to be writing on this in the Laura Murphy Report to flesh out some of these interesting tidbits he's thrown out here to tantalize you. Again, I'm going to be covering the Trump election and what does that mean for markets. And of course, in future episodes of the podcast, we'll be returning to some of these more secular matters. But we did want to share this with you to, again, just remind people that, hey, these are extraordinary times we're in. And again, even if you personally don't believe in a higher power and things like that, there are plenty of people who do believe in it. And that's certainly something relevant as people are motivated on the world stage. And also what we think is the decline of the might of the U.S., call it empire, call it whatever you want. That's something that also needs to be reckoned with. And it's good to have a historical background just to see, you know, this is not the first time such a thing has happened. In fact, this is the standard fate of world powers, is that they wax and wane. And so it's good to be knowledgeable in history. And as Carlos is saying here, he's reading someone who was documenting it in real time, as it were, explaining what the heck just happened to the Roman Empire. Carlos, any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
No, but I hope some of you are motivated to at least go to the book yourself. But you're right, Bob. I think if I write an article on this, I may have to do it in several parts, because it's a big book. And it may take me, you know, three issues to really kind of flesh out some of the more important details from it.
Okay, well, there you have it, folks. And again, this is why I knew I picked the right guy when I started co-authoring things with, because he Carl stumbles upon something and goes and follows it to its end. It could be Dodd-Frank. He just says to me one day, you know, Bob, I just started actually reading the Dodd-Frank Act, and you wouldn't believe what's in there. I mean, who talks like that? Carlos Lara does that, too. Okay, folks, that's it for today. We will catch you next time. In the meantime, just be safe and come to our website and other places for good advice and getting alternative sources of information, because if nothing else, the year 2016 has shown that the establishment purveyors of news have no idea what's going on. The issue is just, did they know they were wrong, or were they just completely clueless? You know, were they lying, or were they just clueless? That's the issue. We don't know. But for sure, they're not the places to go for information, even on something as you would think factual as financial markets. In fact, the misinformation is piled even higher perhaps there than anywhere else. We'll catch you next time, folks. Thanks for tuning in.
You've just finished another episode of The Laura Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Laura Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LauraMurphy.com are not herein engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.